The Witness of Creation Book Series by Billy Crone. Part 3, A Special Creation. Chapter 17, The Lie of the Ape Man.
Until the 1990s, no trial in American history attracted more attention than this one did. It was held in 1925 in Dayton, Tennessee, and it accused a teacher of violating a state law that banned the teaching of human evolution. Although the teacher had not taught biology, and could not even remember for sure whether he'd discussed evolution while substituting for the regular teacher, he agreed to be arrested and stand trial anyway. For the contest, the ACLU brought in several big city attorneys, including the famed criminal lawyer and atheist Clarence Darrow from Chicago. And to assist the prosecution, the World's Christian Fundamentals Association secured the services of William Jennings Bryan of Nebraska, a 3-time candidate for president and anti-evolutionist. It was until this trial that most public schools taught the divine creation theory. Students in those days studied the facts of science and were told that the evidence indicates there is a creator who designed the universe and plants and animals. But that was soon to change. The trial lasted 8 days, and as expected, it ended in a conviction for the young teacher, whose own attorneys even conceded his guilt. However, in that famous trial, atheist lawyer Clarence Darrow said, "It is bigotry to only teach one view of origin." He said, "Students should be taught both the creation and evolution theories." So, in the 35 years following that trial, the theory of evolution was not only taught more and more, but it was being presented as if it were a proven scientific fact. Until today, we actually have this trial in reverse. Evolution is now the only theory that is taught. Of course, I'm talking about the infamous Scopes Monkey Trial.
Now, how many of you guys have ever heard about the Scopes Monkey Trial before? Yeah, I'm sure most of us have. But what most of us don't know about the Scopes Monkey Trial is that it seemed to be a watershed event that forever changed our nation. How do I know? Because even though evolutionists lost that famous case, a momentum for evolutionary teachings began to take a foothold. And over the next 35 years, the theory of evolution was taught more and more in our schools. Until finally, in the early 60s, prayer and Bible reading were taken out and evolution was put in. And the results have been disastrous. Let's take a look at the official behavioral statistics from the U.S. Census Bureau from about 1963 on, and you tell me if evolutionary teaching hasn't had a horrible impact on our country.
Number 1. Back in the 1950s, the average textbook only had 2,000 to 3,000 words about evolution. But in 1963, it jumped up to 33,000 words. And it just so happened that 1963 is also when prayer and Bible reading was taken out of the American school system. Gee, I wonder what effect this has had on our country. Number 2. Since 1963, sexually transmitted diseases among teenagers and young adults have increased nearly 400%. Number 3. Instances of premarital sex among teenagers have skyrocketed. Number 4. Unwed pregnancies among young girls are up 553%. Number 5. Unmarried couples living together are up 725%. Number 6. Divorce rates are up to 111%. Some parts of California, the divorce rate is one for every marriage. Number 7. Single-parent households are quickly becoming the norm. Number 8. SAT scores have plummeted. Number 9. Alcohol and drug consumption have gone ballistic. Number 10. Violent crimes are up 995%. Number 11. Gee, if you tell kids they came from an ape, then why are we surprised when they act like apes?
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say the effects of evolutionary teaching haven't been very good for our country. How about you? And gee, I guess that's why we need to continue in our study called The Witness of Creation. And what we've been doing is taking a look at the 5 different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal, intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe. And so far, We've seen the first evidence God left behind showing us this amazing truth is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And then in the last six chapters we saw the second evidence was a young creation. And there we saw how evolution calls Jesus Christ a liar, God the Father a liar, and even God's Word a liar by giving us these huge dates of millions and billions of years for our supposed existence. Therefore, we expose this lie by looking at the evidence of space, the evidence of Earth, the evidence of logic, the fallacy of carbon dating and all other evolutionary dating methods, the fallacy of the geologic column, and in the last chapter the evidence of rapid formation of rocks, caves, stalagmites, and stalactites, and even fossils showing us that we really do have a young creation just like the Bible says. But people, believe it or not, did you know that an intelligent creation and a young creation are not the only evidences that God has left behind for us showing that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe? The third evidence He's left behind for us is a special creation. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Genesis 1:24-28. And God said, "Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So, God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground."
Now folks, according to our text, the Bible is clear. After God made the animals, He made who? He made me and you, mankind, right? But not only that, what else did it say? God made mankind specifically in His what? In His image, right? But here's the problem. What does evolution teach? Do they say we were specially created in the image of a special God? No. They say we were created by chance in the image of an ape. They don't say God created us after the animals. They say we actually came from an animal, right? Therefore, I'd say we better take a look at not just the scriptural evidence but the scientific evidence of this supposed ape-man evolution and see who's telling the truth. How about you? But before we do that, let's take a refresher course in the evolutionary answer as to the supposed origin of man. Here's the typical textbook response.
In the beginning, about 4 billion years ago, the air was unfitting to breathe. The earth was without life as the sun beat down, storms lashed the coasts and volcanoes poured hissing lava into the ocean's waters. But it was these natural jolts that fused simple molecules into more complex ones. Amino acids started to be formed and then interact with each other, and soon primitive proteins were fashioned, perhaps as a worm-like molecule. Somehow the right molecules got together, and the first living cell appeared. This first living cell is the great ancestor of all plants and animals on Earth, including man. From this first cell, all other forms of life evolved. This tiny first living cell is the father of us all. How did man come from this first cell? Here's the story.
As time went on, this first cell developed into amoeba-like organisms and other primitive creatures that could survive in the ocean. After millions of years, these creatures evolved into fish. Some of these fish developed lungs so that they could survive outside of the water.
Gradually they began to make their way onto land as the first amphibians.
These amphibians then evolved into reptiles, and the earth soon became populated with great dinosaurs. Some of these reptiles started to develop legs that could move around better, and these creatures became what we today would call mammals. Other reptiles developed wings and flew away to become birds.
Where did man come from? One of these early mammals was known as a tree shrew. He was not much larger than a squirrel, and in many ways looked like a squirrel. This creature lived in trees and gradually evolved into primitive monkeys and other ape-like creatures.
And from these ape-like creatures there evolved the great apes that we can see in zoos today, as well as a creature who came down from the trees and started walking upright.
This is man. Our father, that first living cell, would have been very proud of us if he could have seen how far we have come these past millions of years.
Now folks, how many of you had that typical story drilled in your heads from Wee High that we supposedly came from a supposed simple cell, to a blob of gel, to an ape that smells? Of course it's commonplace, right? But the point is this. Is it really true? Did we really come from an ape? I don't think so. How do I know? Because the first reason why we know we were created in the image of God is because the ape-man evolution is a lie. People, we are going to take a look at the supposed accounts of apes evolving into man, and you tell me if we haven't been lied to.
Nebraska Man. In 1922, scientists discovered a fossil that was reported to be 1 million years old, and it was heralded as the missing link in human evolution. It was called Nebraska Man, since it was found in the state of Nebraska, and Henry Osborne, an eminent paleontologist, said it combined characteristics of chimpanzees and man. This fossil became famous because it was used as evidence for evolution in the 1925 Scopes trial. For many years, evolutionists described Nebraska Man as a missing link. But the only problem is that this fossil did not belong to any type of human or ape. It was found to be just a mere tooth, and that of a pig. Eager evolutionists built a whole imaginary society and lifestyle around this single tooth. They built the entire Nebraska Man out of plaster of Paris and imagination, and then they even built him a wife. You have to be good to know what his wife looks like from his tooth.
Piltdown Man. For more than 50 years, we were led to believe that this ancient creature was another supposed ancestor of modern man. It was found in a gravel pit in Sussex, England in 1912, and was considered by some sources to be the second most important fossil proving the evolution of man. But when two scientists eventually took a closer look, they found out that Piltdown Man was actually a fraud. The original discoverers took a human skull and an ape's jawbone, filed them down and made them fit together, treated them with acid, buried them in a gravel pit, and then discovered Piltdown Man. 500 people studied the fossils and wrote PhD dissertations and earned doctor's degree on the Piltdown fossils, all based on a fraud. For decades, boys and girls went to school and were taught that Piltdown Man was proof of evolution, and it was a hoax. I wonder how many kids during those years lost confidence in the Bible and never got saved.
Neanderthal Man. This is the first supposed ape man found in Darwin's day. Still synonymous with brutishness, the first Neanderthal remains were found in 1856, in the Niender Valley of Germany, by a school teacher, who discovered a skull cap and a few other bones. Then in 1908, Professor Boulet of the Institute of Human Paleontology in Paris declared Neanderthal an ignorant knuckle-dragging ape-like man, because of his low eyebrow ridges and the stooped-over posture. However, upon closer examination, it has been discovered that Neanderthal was just as human as us, and his stooped appearance was because of arthritis and rickets. The Neanderthal skeleton they found was bent over not because he was slowly evolving, slowly coming up. It was an old man with arthritis slowly going down. Expert Rudolf Virchow declared, the curved leg bones were the result of rickets, a vitamin deficiency, and the knots of bone above the eyes had been caused by damage to the skull. And as far as the low eyebrow ridges and long sloping forehead, we see the same feature in people still alive today. Many Malaysian natives have the same skull characteristics. Furthermore, these so-called Neanderthals are now recognized as skilled hunters, believers in an afterlife, and even skilled surgeons. But the Neanderthal man is still in textbooks right now, even though it was proven wrong 50 years ago.
Java Man. This supposed prehistoric man was found on the island of Java and was reported to be the missing link between man and ape. It was another one of the first alleged ape men ever found and used by evolutionists. This Java man was initially discovered by Dutchman Eugene Dubois in 1891, and all that was found was a skullcap, three teeth, and a femur. The femur was found 50 feet away from the original skullcap a full year later. But after serious study, it was discovered that the two pieces of Java Man were from two different skulls from two different areas of the island. And later on, and after closer study, Eugene Dubois, who made the original discovery, rejected their authenticity and admitted that his fossil findings were the mixing together of human skull remnants and of the femoral bone of a giant gibbon. He must have had a bad conscience.
Peking Man. This supposed man-like creature was found in a cave in Peking, China, during the early part of this century. No other scientists have directly observed the original site, and it has not actually been seen in more than 50 years. Only the skulls of the Peking Man were ever found, and never the lower skeleton, as well a few human-like tools. And what's interesting is that all of the examples of Peking Man had the back of their skull smashed in, exactly matching the result when people of that region hunt for monkey brains. Monkey meat is very tough and quite difficult to eat, but the interior of monkey skulls even today is considered a delicacy by some Southeast natives. As it turns out, Peking Man represents not man's ancestor, but man's meal, and the tools were used to bash in the skulls to eat the brains of a monkey.
Rhomopithecus. For more than 20 years, Rhomopithecus was considered one of man's ancestors on the basis of some teeth and jaw remnants. It is included in millions of textbooks and Time Life volumes on human evolution. In fact, a detailed reconstruction of his whole body walking upright was constructed, mind you, only from jaws and teeth. And if that wasn't bad enough, fossil findings in Turkey in 1980 and in Pakistan in 1982 proved that Rhomopithecus represented extinct kinds of monkeys closely resembling the orangutan.
Orky Man. This creature was found in the southern Spanish town of Orky in 1982, and hailed as the oldest fossilized human remains ever found in Europe. Scientists had said the skull belonged to a 17-year-old man, who lived 900,000 to 1.6 million years ago, and even had very detailed drawings done to represent what he would have looked like. But only 1 year later, officials admitted that the skull fragment was not human, but probably came from a four-month-old monkey.
Lucy. Lucy is the latest find that has been almost universally accepted as mankind's ancestor. Discovered in 1974 at Dar Valley, Ethiopia by Donald Johansson, Lucy was less than half a complete skeleton that he named after the Beatles' song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. However, when the bones were studied by spectrograph, they were found to match a chimpanzee, rather than a man. But that's not all. What scattered bones that were found were assembled from totally different locations. The knee joint that he found was a mile and a half away from the rest of the skeleton, and yet it was labeled in National Geographic as a Lucy's knee. Donald never corrected them, it was not Lucy's knee found a mile and a half away. Then Donald said, "I think Lucy is becoming a human because the ape has a straight femur, but Lucy's knee is angled to the side like a human's. But any monkey that climbs trees has an angled femur, and monkeys that walk on the ground have a straight femur." By the way, the St. Louis Zoo put up a display of Lucy with human feet on it. And guess how many foot bones were found? Zero. Pure propaganda. As it turns out, Lucy is just an unusual monkey, and there might even still be some alive in Sumatra down near Vietnam today.
Tumai Man. Skull turns the clock back on evolution, read a headline of the Times newspaper on July 11, 2002, following an article on the 10th of July 2002 issue of the prestigious science magazine Nature about a new species of archaic human being called the Tumai Man. What they found was a near-complete cranium, jawbone and teeth, and Nature magazine said it belonged to the oldest human-like creature yet discovered, supposedly dating 7 million years old. However, by the 12th of July, an article appeared in the Science Nature section of BBC News Online claiming that the skull wasn't quite what it seemed. It turned out to simply be the remains of a gorilla.
Rosia Man. Rosia Man was found in what is now Zimbabwe, and was considered to be the first early human fossil to be found in Africa. However, paleontologists soon discovered that this creature had undoubtedly suffered from tooth decay, and they were having a hard time understanding how this disease of civilization could have attacked this supposed prehistoric man. And if that wasn't bad enough, two very odd holes in the side of the skull caused the experts even greater perplexity. In the view of Professor Mayer of Berlin, they looked like the entry and exit holes of a modern-day bullet.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say based on the evidence we just saw, those ape-man accounts are a bunch of baloney. How about you? In fact, I'd say somebody would have to be a Neanderthal to believe them. In fact, not only does the evidence we've seen and common sense tell us those ape-man accounts are nothing but a bunch of baloney, but believe it or not, even the evolutionists are admitting it. See for yourself.
Number 1. Gareth Nelson of the American Museum of Natural History. We've got to have some ancestors. We'll pick those. Why? Because we know they have to be there, and these are the best candidates. That's by and large the way it has worked. I am not exaggerating. Number 2. Anthropologist E.A. Houghton. From a Neanderthal skull, an artist can fashion the features of a chimpanzee or a philosopher, and it is wise to not put your faith in reconstructions. Number 3. John T. Bonner. We evolutionists have been telling our students for years not to accept any statement on its face value but to examine the evidence, and, therefore, it is rather a shock to discover that we have failed to follow our own sound advice. Number 4. Miles Eldridge. We paleontologists have said that the history of life supports the story of gradual adaptive change, all the while really knowing that it does not. Number 5. Lord Solly Zuckerman. The record of reckless speculation of human origins is so astonishing that it is legitimate to ask whether much science is yet to be found in this field at all. Number 6. T.L. Moore. The more one studies paleontology, the more certain one becomes that evolution is based on faith alone. Number 7. Dr. Robert Martin, Zoological Society of London. In recent years, several authors have written popular books on human origins which were based more on fantasy and subjectivity than on fact and objectivity. At the moment, science cannot offer a full answer on the origin of humanity. Number 8. Lord Zuckerman, British anatomist. If man evolved from an ape-like creature, there is not even a trace of such evidence in the fossil record. Number 9. Anthropologist Dr. Lyle Watson. Modern apes, for instance, seem to have sprung from out of nowhere. They have no yesterday, no fossil record. And the true origin of modern humans, of upright, naked, tool-making, big-brained beings, is, if we are honest with ourselves, an equally mysterious matter. Number 10. Anthropologist Dr. Tim White. The problem with a lot of anthropologists is that they want so much to find a hominid that any scrap of bone becomes a hominid bone.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say if the evolutionists are admitting that these ape-man accounts are a bunch of baloney, then these ape-man accounts must be a bunch of baloney. How about you? And as one guy said, if all you have is lies to support your theory, then maybe it's time to get a new theory. Hello. But remember folks, we're not just dealing with a deceptive theory here. We're dealing with the dangerous side effects of this theory. Again, if you teach kids they came from an ape, why are we shocked when they act like apes? And apparently, that's why Martin Luther warned us of this.
I am much afraid that the schools will prove to be the great gates to hell unless they diligently labor in explaining the scriptures, engraving them in the hearts of youth. I advise no one to place his child where the scriptures do not reign paramount. Every institution in which men are not increasingly occupied with the Word of God must become corrupt.
Now, folks, how many of you would say we are suffering the consequences of not listening to great advice like that? And here's the point. And to think the whole time, it's all based on a pack of lies. But you might be thinking, okay, so maybe the supposed evolutionary transition of an ape into a man is a bunch of baloney, but what about the supposed evolution of animals? You know, like the horse and whale, and what about natural selection and mutations and all that other stuff they use to explain how other forms of life supposedly evolved? Well, hey, great question. I guess that's why we'll take a look at that in the next chapter.